Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And as you can see, we are wearing our Get Loud Lambeau t-shirts, brand new, hot off the presses. And in anticipation of the game we've been waiting for, Wes, Packers-Seahawks, the season opener, week one, 3:25 p.m., Sunday at Lambeau Field. Are you ready?
Yeah, I am. And I think judging by everybody I've talked to, players, beat writers, fans, it's time. It's time to play some football again. Because really, Mike, it's 4, 5, 6 months of preparation that go into this thing. Now, after all that time that you've spent installing the offense, the defense, getting an opportunity to put it out on the field and see how it matches up against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and this is an opponent the Packers plenty familiar with. This will be the, if my math is right, fifth time in the last four seasons that these two teams will meet, twice in 2014, including the playoffs, once each in 2015 and 2016. Here we are opening the 2017 season. Packers players, you know, talk about this as though they're like a division opponent because they've studied them every year. They know them so well. So we've talked about a lot of the different matchups back and forth all week long. What do you think will make the biggest difference in this game come Sunday afternoon?
I'm not one for hyperbole a lot. I guess we're all susceptible to it at times. But my biggest thing is these weapons on offense. And for my money, you know, probably since 2011, maybe even earlier, this is the deepest the Packers run with their offensive weapons. It starts with Jordy Nelson. You have him as the NFL's reigning comeback player of the year. There's so many ways that you can use him, you know, whether it's in the slot, whether it's on the boundary. The way he was able to bounce back last season, despite not really having much of a training camp, despite not playing any preseason games, and still find his footing once the regular season began was an ultimate testament to him. And the fact that, if you think about it now, Mike, the Packers returned their top three receivers for the fourth consecutive year.
Yeah.
That's a luxury not a lot of teams in the NFL have. And then you bring in Martellus Bennett, you bring in Lance Kendricks, you have Richard Rodgers coming back, Ty Montgomery in the backfield. We've talked a lot about these weapons and how it's all going to shuffle out on the field. Getting an opportunity to finally see it, I think, is one of the most intriguing things that the Packers have going into this season.
Yeah, I agree with you. When I look at this game, though, and when I look at the past history between the Packers and the Seahawks, I have to focus on the defensive side of the ball. You look at the way last season ended, the Packers' defense was in rough shape, both injury-wise, performance-wise, everything about it. But about a month before that, a month and a half before that, this defense intercepted Russell Wilson five times at Lambeau Field. Now, I think a few things are going to be very different about this game when you look at that turnover aspect. Number one, it's in September, not December. I think the cold weather had an impact on the Seahawks last year. They didn't catch the ball well, deflected passes that the Packers were able to intercept, and they took advantage. You're not going to have that sort of weather advantage this time against the Seahawks. But also, it's going to be different personnel for the Packers and healthier personnel. You've got Devon House. You've got potentially Kevin King, the rookie second-round pick. Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, now in their third year, clearly healthier this past summer than they were last year when they were both fighting through pre-surgery, post-surgery injuries, all that kind of stuff. But I think the Packers, especially when they're playing at home, they've got to take the ball away on defense, keep that crowd into the game defensively, and make Russell Wilson play from behind.
Yeah, you build your team for every opponent in the NFL. It can't just be for one specifically. But I do like the way the Packers have structured this defense over the last few years to really defend well against the Seattle Seahawks, which I think has played into why they've had the success they've had as of late. You mentioned the cornerbacks, and they certainly are going to play a big role in this, but also the safeties of this defense now. Morgan Burnett dropping down, whether it's as a hybrid linebacker or as that whip slot position. He did a wonderful job last year in matching up with Jimmy Graham. Dom Capers has actually had pretty good history against Graham for the most part. Haha, Clinton Dix, his first game in the NFL in 2014 was against the Seattle Seahawks.
That's right.
So there's plenty of little storylines that go into this thing, but whether it's the cornerbacks, whether it's the safeties, the secondary in general, they're matching up against one of the best in the league on the other sideline, and I think that's something that drives a lot of these guys to really pull out their best performance on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's much the same thing, getting back to what you were saying about the Packers' offensive weapons. This Seahawks defense, it's been one of the best in the league for a long time. The Legion of Boom, whatever you want to call that secondary, with Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, who did not play in last year's game due to an injury, with Cam Chancellor, who's been around for a while. They've, you know, had some different personnel changes and whatnot at the other cornerback spot opposite Richard Sherman. But when you've got three of the four guys in your secondary being talked about amongst the elite in the league, you know, that's a pretty impressive group. And this Packers wide receiver group, the weapon group, Martellus Bennett, Jordy Nelson that you talked about, they've got their work cut out for them.
They do, and that's why it's also really an intriguing chess match that's going to happen Sunday, because we know the history of the Seahawks. We know that, you know, Richard Sherman traditionally stays on his one side. The Packers played into that a little bit in 2014 when they faced him, but now the way that how deep they are at their weapons, the way that they can mix and match personnel, the different amount of looks that they can give in the slot, whether it's Bennett, whether it's Randall Cobb, whether it's Jordy Nelson, that I think is really going to be a big X factor in this game, and the Packers, you know, looking to find the offensive success that they had last year against
yeah,
the Seahawks.
No question about it. But with that, Wes, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, I can't end the week without throwing another, you know, Spoff stats and info at
yes.
you. I looked up something with regards to Earl Thomas and his injury last year for the Seattle Seahawks. Before Earl Thomas was hurt, Seattle gave up no more than 25 points in a game all season long. After Earl Thomas was out for the rest of the year, they gave up 34 or more in 3 out of 6 games. That guy is a key player in this ballgame. But yeah. With that, I want to flip gears a little bit and talk again about the Packers defense and another new addition to the Packers defense that we haven't discussed much this week, and that's Quentin Dial, the defensive lineman, another cast-off, I guess you'd say, from the 49ers as they switch schemes. The Packers pick up Ahmad Brooks. Now they also pick up Quentin Dial. Your thoughts on the Alabama alum coming to Green Bay? He's a fifth-year pro.
Yeah, fifth-year pro, and the first time I saw him, it's kind of like with Ahmad Brooks, really tall, lengthy guy, but 6'5", 318 pounds. You know, HaHa Clinton Dix mentioned it in the locker room, a former teammate of his at Alabama, looks a lot like Dean Lowry. And not to say that they're the same players, they do different things, but I think that gives you an idea of the direction the Packers want to go with that defensive front. Dial is a versatile guy, you know, kind of in the mold of some of the transactions they made in recent years at that position, a guy that can play the nose tackle, but also can move out to the five tech if they need him to. Really giving them the flexibility that, okay, if you want to use him in a base defense, he'll be there for you. If you want to rush him inside as a three technique, you can do that. If you want him to be an outside pass rusher in a dime package, also on the table. So Dial, he's really motivated. He had a busy week. He found out on Saturday he was going to be released. Same day the Packers called. Next week, Monday comes to Green Bay for a visit. Tuesday signs. Wednesday goes back to San Francisco to get his stuff. And then Thursday was on the practice field, so it was a busy week.
Yeah, that's a lot of cross-country trekking there to get yourself get yourself into your new environment and with your new team. He practiced for the first time with the Packers on Thursday afternoon. The Packers have one more practice on Saturday in preparation for this game. But my first impression of Dial, I admit I didn't really know much about him when he came out in the draft and through his years in San Francisco, but one glance at him and you just say he looks the part. I mean, you said it. 6'5", 318, you know, that's your defensive lineman in a base 3-4. That's the kind of guy you want who can handle double teams. He can, you know, still penetrate and disrupt a little bit. And I'm really interested to see what he does now, having gotten here so late in the process. I don't know how much he'll play on Sunday, but you mentioned his former teammate, Ha Ha Clinton Dix at Alabama. That's a guy who's pretty excited to have this guy in his locker room again.
Yeah, if you weren't sure of how excited Ha Ha Clinton Dix was, just go back and scroll through his Twitter account, I think, on Saturday when the news got out that he was going to be visiting. Clinton Dix and him go back a long way. They both pretty much came in at the same time at Alabama. And he said, you know, once he found out, he wasn't aware that he actually was released even by the 49ers until the word was coming out that he had a visit in Green Bay. But once he found that out, I mean, he said immediately he was, you know, on the phone with them. He was telling them, you know, the atmosphere is great. You love the coaching staff. It's a chance to win. Was really putting over the system. And as you said as well, Mike, when you look at the Packers' defense, it is going to be a transition for him. This is pretty late in the ballgame, as he was even asked in the locker room on Thursday. In a perfect world, he probably wishes he could have gotten released earlier in the summer to give him an opportunity to get acclimated quickly to a scheme. But be that as it may, he played for Vic Fangio in San Francisco. There's parallels between the system he runs and Dom Capers. And Ha Ha Clinton Dix said it too. It's really not that much different from what they did at Alabama either in Green Bay. So there's a lot of flexibility there. And for that reason, Clinton Dix and also Dial both feel like this will be a pretty easy transition for him.
Yeah, this is one of those examples of how small a world the NFL can be in a sense. You're talking about Dom Capers and Vic Fangio, two guys, two defensive minds that go way back. Yeah. They worked together back in their coaching histories. Both have put together successful defenses over the course of their careers. And aside from the short time frame, at least for this week one, that Quentin Dial has and Ahmad Brooks has for that matter, I would expect that this transition for both of them really won't take too long. And I think there's a good chance we see a lot of Ahmad Brooks on the field on Sunday, simply because he got here a little sooner. He's actually had a full week of practice to kind of get up to speed.
Yeah, and you and I talked about it too. I mean, Brooks understands how this works. It's going after the quarterback. It's rushing. Now there's concepts, there's zone drops, things that he's going to have to, in the long run, have to adapt to. But, you know, when the ball gets hiked, you're running after the quarterback. That's a pass rusher's job. So it is an interesting position the Packers are in with Dial, with Brooks, even with Ricky Jean-Francois coming in. All those guys with a past history in 3-4 defenses now getting a chance to test their hand in Dom Capers' scheme.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, with that, let's throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford sitting alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, one element of this game, this week one matchup, Packers-Seahawks, that we haven't really talked much about yet is special teams. And the Packers have a brand new rookie punter, Justin Vogel, the undrafted prospect out of the University of Miami, won the job really with a very, very solid and impressive performance in the final preseason game against the Rams. And the Packers are going into 2017 now with a brand new punter.
Yeah, interesting, Mike. Out of all these years where they've had undrafted rookies make the team, the first time a specialist has made it under Mike McCarthy during his time here. So it's definitely kind of uncharted waters a little bit. But at the same time, I think Vogel's ready for the opportunity. And I thought he had such an interesting comment to you when you were talking with him this week, in that, yes, he has the job. Yes, he's on the 53-man roster. But as NFL has shown, I mean, things can change quickly. So that training camp mindset with him, it's still sort of there, even though now we're in the regular season.
Yeah, I was impressed with, you know, him being such a young guy, but yet he understands the big picture. And I'm sure having veterans like Mason Crosby and Brett Goode that he practices with every day has an impact on this. But he knows that the job that he won, he's won the job for week one. It's not as though, yeah, he's automatically the punter for the whole season. He felt like he was kicking for his job in every preseason game, and he feels like he will be kicking for his job in every regular season game. In that sense, he says he doesn't really feel like he'll be any more nervous because of the fact that it's now the regular season instead of the preseason. The difference is that the mistakes can be much more costly. You've got the rest of the team relying on you, and this Seattle team with Tyler Lockett, a speedster in the return game, both on punts and kickoffs, this guy is a weapon, and Vogel is going to play a big part in trying to neutralize him.
Yeah, and Vogel, the one thing that really jumped out to me during his time here in this training camp was just his hang time, his leg strength, even sometimes where their consistency was missing in a practice here or a punt there. His hang time's always there. So it gives a guy like Jeff Janis a chance to get down. And that's so imperative against Lockett. We've seen it so many times since he entered the league a few years ago. If you give him an opportunity, if you have a shank, if you have, you know, you lose containment on the outside, he's a guy that can really hurt you with that. But the Packers have a lot of comfort and confidence in Vogel. And, you know, I asked Ron Zook, that the special teams coordinator, on Thursday during assistant coach's availability. All told, he put together a solid training camp, and the fact that the Packers didn't entertain an Andy Lee or one of these other veteran punters that came onto the market during final cuts, I think really speaks to the work they put in with Vogel over the last 4 months and the fact that they do feel comfortable with him to be the guy that's going to be trying to set the table for that coverage team.
Yeah, that they're definitely confident in him. His performance against the Rams really was impressive. He had 7 punts overall. Really, the last one at the very end of the night in the fourth quarter was the only one that was shaky in any respect. He still had very impressive gross average, net average, both well above 40 yards. He was forcing fair catches. He was kicking the ball towards the boundary. That, you know, the hang time, the direction, all that is what you need against a guy like Lockett. This speedy receiver for the Seahawks, in 2015, he returned both a punt and a kickoff for a touchdown. Last year, he also had another punt return, not for a touchdown, but it was 60-plus yards on a return. This guy is a potential game changer. You flip that now to the Packers' return game. We don't know exactly how things are going to go, but based on what we saw in the preseason, it looks like Trevor Davis and Randall Cobb will be your two options on punt return. Could be a situational thing, could be a field position thing. And then it looks like Jeff Janis will get the first crack at kickoff return. Is that the way you read it as well?
Yeah, you know, Aaron Jones took a couple kickoff returns during camp, but it really seemed like right from the beginning, Jeff Janis, that was his job. Trevor Davis has that capability too, but Janis just fits so well with it, with his body type, his explosiveness, and just his general speed. Very good fit for kickoff returns. Punt return is a little bit more of a question. You know, Micah Hyde did a really exceptional job in that capacity the last few years, so wasn't a massive question. But now, you know, seeing Trevor Davis, his explosiveness, trying to, you know, make sure he holds onto the football, and Randall Cobb potentially being in the cards there too, gives Ron Zook and Mike McCarthy a lot of options for the direction they want to take that unit going into the regular season.
Yeah, we'll just have to see exactly what unfolds in this first game. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, final segment. We made it a tradition last year in season one of Packers Unscripted. Final segment of the week. We take a look at the NFL landscape, the schedule, the NFC North games that are going on. And we already have one game in the books, Thursday night in Foxborough, Gillette Stadium. Down goes Frazier. Is that the phrase? The champs go down at the hands of the Kansas City Chiefs. A dominant fourth quarter by Kansas City, 21 straight points to win by 15. I don't know what you thought, but I thought this game hinged on 4 plays. 2 short yardage, 4th and short stops by the Kansas City defensive front, and then 2 long throws by Alex Smith that were right on target, went for big play touchdowns, and it seemed like to me that the game really hinged on those 4 snaps.
Remember earlier in the show when I said I don't like to get into hyperbole? But, I mean, that had to have been Alex Smith's best performance, right?
Boy, that was something.
I mean, there was this conversation in the offseason about him needing to take more chances, be less of a check-down quarterback. I mean, that throw he had to Kareem Hunt was as fine of a pass as you're going to see in the NFL. It looked
Absolutely.
Like Aaron Rodgers was throwing that ball.
Absolutely.
Because not only did it need to be in the right spot to complete the play, if Hunt breaks his stride there, he's not going to be able to get a touchdown off of it.
Right.
And I'll say this, too. I don't know what exactly happened in Kansas City. I'm really, honestly, I'm in the dark with a lot of that, but John Dorsey can scout, man. I don't care what people say.
I mean, look at that roster he put together. That running back out of Toledo, that rookie third rounder, holy cow, what a debut. It fumbles on his first carry and then goes on and lights it up the rest of the night.
Jayrone Elliott, now the former Packers running back, I remember him talking to me a little bit about that back, and I want to say it was March, you know, to kind of keep an eye open for that guy, a fellow Toledo alumnus.
Right.
And he was a star. I mean, Hill's an explosive young player as well. They have some weapons there, and I think with Mahomes now being there in Kansas City, I don't know if that's what lit the fire underneath Alex Smith or how it's going to play out through the course of the season, but if Justin Houston is healthy, I mean, you got to watch out for that team.
Yeah, no question now. As we look at the other NFC North foes for Green Bay and what they're up to, the Bears at home against the Atlanta Falcons, tough matchup there. Chicago gets the defending NFC champs right off the bat. Excuse me. Detroit also playing at home against Arizona. An interesting matchup there because Arizona is one of those teams. They were just in the NFC Championship game two seasons ago, did not make the playoffs last year. Do they have one more, you know, big run in them with Carson Palmer at quarterback? And then Monday Night Football, Saints against the Vikings, Adrian Peterson now with New Orleans going up against his old team.
Very interesting how that works out with the schedule makers, that Adrian Peterson, the Saints, taking on the Vikings right off the bat. You know, the storyline is going to be Peterson, and has been Peterson taking on his old team. To me, it's really seeing not only, you know, what he has left, but how the Saints are going to use him, because in the past, they really haven't committed to one back. They usually typically lean on the pass. Now that you have arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rusher in NFL history, how do you incorporate him into this offense? I'm very curious to see that.
Yeah, definitely. And as we've talked about, Packers-Seahawks is as good as it gets in week one, but Sunday Night Football is another big game between two teams that made the playoffs a year ago, and that's the Giants against the Cowboys, a big game in the NFC East in the division, but also in the NFC in general, considering potentially the hype and the promise that both of these teams potentially show for 2017.
Yeah, and Zeke Elliott being available for this game, that's a huge plus for the Cowboys going up against that defensive front. I don't know if I've seen a defense remake itself like the Giants did last season. Maybe you can make the case Dom Capers and the Packers in 09. I mean, just taking a complete, you know, 180 as far as where they were at. And again, for the Cowboys' perspective, with Prescott trying to get that offense moving early on this season, will be really fun to watch.
Yeah, well, a lot of good football coming up here, and it's finally for real, Wes. But with that, we will wrap up this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. The team account is at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.